Live from the Business Radio X studio inside Renaissance Bank, the bank that specializes in understanding you. It's time for North Fulton Business Radio.
And Hogan, folks, I'm John Ray. Welcome to another edition of North Fulton Business Radio. We're coming to you still from the virtual Business Radio X studio in Alpharetta, waiting to return to our home inside Renaissance Bank. And in the meantime, we're plugging along with the folks at Renaissance. They've done a great job for some of my clients in terms of PPP loans and some of the help that they have been along the way. If you're looking for a better banking relationship, check them out. Go to renaissancebank.com, get the overview there. If the local Renaissance Bank offices are closed to walk-ins, but open by appointment. So you can go check them out there. And also you can go through the drive-through. They're open anytime and ready for business. And actually you can open an account through the drive-through, folks. So check them out, renaissancebank.com. Renaissance Bank, understanding you, member FDIC. And now we welcome Steve Fisher. And Steve is the has his own practice with B2B CFO. Steve, welcome.
Well, hi, John. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. So tell folks a little bit about you and B2B CFO. What do you do? How do you help folks?
Well, John, I'm a multi-decade CFO. I was an operational CFO for a professional services company for quite a few years. And now I consult. I bring that expertise and those experiences to privately held business owners who are in a position where they need some strategic guidance within their organization and are looking for a little bit of outside help. So I come in and support those business owners and help them realize their goals.
So you're in the lingo, the industry lingo, an outsourced CFO or fractional CFO, I guess, for business owners that need a little more heft, if you will, in their financial operations of their company, but don't necessarily need you full time, or maybe don't have that as part of their budget or what have you, right?
Right. I'm I'm not usually in house full time. I do have actually long term engagements with my clients. In fact, we did a survey of our client base and found that our average engagement is over 5.5 years with a client. What happens is we typically will go in and I will meet with a client on a periodic basis, weekly, semi-monthly, whatever, depending on the needs of the customer, and give them that advice and that expertise that they don't have themselves or within their own accounting department.
Tell folks a little bit about B2B CFO, just so everyone understands what your firm is all about, because you're a national network of CFOs.
We are. We are the oldest company of our kind in the country. We've been around for 30 some odd years. We have about 200 partners around the country. All of the partners are like me. In fact, all the partners have multiple decades of operational finance experience. So when you work with a B2B CFO partner, you're actually working with a someone who has actually been a practicing CFO for multiple organizations before they began consulting. We've seen those problems. We've been working trying to make payrolls and set up financing and help physical plan expansions, help in M&A transactions, all those things that a CFO would do. We've actually done for our own companies, and now we consult and bring that expertise to people who don't have that knowledge.
And what that means is you've got access to a lot of colleagues that may have some experience that helps you in the work you do with clients, and vice versa. You can help other folks in the network with experiences you've had.
That is correct. And that is a great summary of what I think is perhaps the single greatest benefit you get by engaging me or one of my partners. Mm-hmm. Is you don't just get us. You get you get access, as you said, to the knowledge base that all of my partners have that we actively share. So you end up with 6,500, 7,000 years somewhat of experience that you can tap into. In fact, I would say it's a knowledge base that is got more depth and breadth available to a small to mid-sized business owner than some mid to large size companies have, who all they have is what's ever in their own finance house.
Sure.
So it's quite a value.
You have got an interesting background, Steve. That's not necessarily what folks would expect from somebody that's now it has a practice like yours, a CFO practice like yours. Why don't you tell people about that?
Well, John, the biggest biggest thing is that I'm not a CPA. I'm not an accountant. I'm actually an engineer by trade who turned an engineering degree into a multiple decade CFO career. Now, it does seem a little bit strange at first, but I can tell you it's not that uncommon. I found that a large percentage of practicing CFOs actually have come out of the engineering ranks. And the reason is it has to do with the way we think. You know, we're problem solvers. We're forward thinking. We execute plans. We're very analytical, very procedure and process oriented people. And that's the engineering mindset, and that's the CFO mindset. It's a little bit different than the accounting mindset.
Yeah, and one of the things we were talking about before we went on the air was the again, nothing wrong with this. This is not a value judgment, because you've got to have backward looking work done when it comes to compliance, like tax returns and that kind of thing. It's extraordinarily important. But your outlook is forward looking. And that's the kind of work you help business owners with. And you cannot be forward looking if all you're doing is backward looking work, right?
Exactly. This is a mantra of mine, is that most of the time the bookkeeping, controlling, CPA work, accountant work, a lot of that backward looking, I would say, in the sense that they're responsible for telling a financial story of an organization up to today. And they have to do it in a very accurate way under very strict guidelines.
Right.
And I and the business owner need that information to project forward. We look through the windshield of the company. Most of those people in that accounting area are looking in the rearview mirror.
Right.
Very important, and not to be diminished. Don't get confused there. I, like you, have great respect, and I need that work, but it's a different focus that I have.
So let's get into that, Steve. As folks, we talk with Steve Fisher, and he's with B2B CFO. Steve, one of the things that you like to emphasize with clients is cash flow versus P&L management. Expand on that.
Most business owners that I know of do a pretty good job of paying attention to their P&L, their income statement. They review it periodically. They understand most of it. They like to see a nice positive number at the bottom of it. But where businesses get into trouble most of the time, especially smaller businesses, is in the managing of the cash flow. Cash flow is you're looking at the production of one specific type of asset. Cash. Cash is the one that you buy things with. You could have the greatest P&L in the world, but if you don't turn that into cash, you can't pay your bills. Your P&L doesn't pay bills. Your P&L doesn't go out, and you're not able to withdraw P&L from your company to support your lifestyle. What you have to focus on is cash. It's a little different. You know, an organization, if you picture a wheel as it's spinning, you're constantly pumping, injecting cash into a business, hopefully buying materials, let's say in a manufacturing situation, producing a good or service, selling that, invoicing for it, getting paid for it, and only then can you pull cash out. And now you have this cash again, and now you have to make a decision. How much of it am I going to inject back into the business, and how much am I going to keep for myself? And the wheel starts turning again. What the CFO does is I view my job as looking at that cycle and spin that wheel faster and faster and smoother and smoother, so that the business owner gets a much more predictable cash flow that they can access for their own benefit and the benefit of the company.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a predictable cash flow and you have solid cash flow forecasts, not only does it benefit you personally, but your company benefits, because all of a sudden your conversation changes when it comes to talking about things like access to capital, lending. Those types of conversations are dramatically different when you have it demonstrate that you have a great handle on your cash flow.
And this is where we get back into the forward-looking piece of what you do, because it's not just the cash you have today. It's the cash you're going to have and that you're going to generate over time that enables you to expand your business or what have you. And that's what you help with.
Correct. You know, business owners intuitively understand cash flow. They struggle with it. Current times, very, very much so.
Mm-hmm.
With what's going on with coronavirus. Businesses are wondering if they can open their doors until, you know, how long can they wait before there's any kind of relief? All these questions they're answering or trying to answer, these are all cash flow related questions. So while the unfortunate part is that while many businesses understand the ramifications of not having a good handle on your cash flow, very few of them have structured procedures in place to manage that cash flow. Mm. They don't know how.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of what I spend a lot of time with my clients working on.
Folks, we're speaking with Steve Fisher, and he's with B2B CFO. Steve, you talk about the concept of a structured growth plan, as opposed to what most folks think of as a business plan. What do you mean by that?
Well, a structured growth plan is a little more formal. You know, John, I'll often ask consultant 101 question to business owners of, you know, where do you envision your business in 5 years? And most business owners have some sort of an answer for that. And then I'll ask them the second question, which is, okay, in order to be there in 5 years, what you just articulated to me, where do your business have to be next year? And not only where does it have to be next year, where does that business have to be in 6 months to get to where you want to be next year, to get to where you have, where you've just told me you want to be in 5 years? And what you find is that oftentimes the question of where you want to be in 5 years is very easy to answer. But the question of where you have to be in 6 months or a year to get there, much more difficult to answer. And the reason is there's not really a plan in place. The five-year vision is a vision. It's a dream. When you start talking about what you have to be doing in 6 months or a year, you're now requiring commitment and accountability on the part of an organization, both the owner and everybody throughout the organization. It's a much more difficult concept to articulate. It requires a lot more commitment on your part as a business owner. And so what I do is I help establish the metrics that are needed within an organization to obtain that five-year vision. And that procedure, that engineering in me coming out, is a structured growth plan.
Makes perfect sense, because you really got to have building blocks to get from here to there. To any goal you have, you've got to have tactics and actions that get you there.
Right. And many times it's, you know, oftentimes business owners are so focused on their day-to-day firefighting, and obviously been very focused on that recently, that they lose sight of where they have to be, let's say, near to midterm to get to where they want to be in that five-year plan.
Mm-hmm.
And so what ends up happening is they never get to where they need to be a year from now to get to where they want to be in 5 years. So what happens is that vision, that dream 5 years from now, keeps getting deferred. It keeps getting deferred. And what I'm saying is there's no reason to defer that. Let's just sit down. Let's actually come up with a plan, a real plan. And let's get to work. And I help ask questions that cause business owners to think about things, think about new strategies, think about new ways of doing things. I can reach out to my network and bring that knowledge in. There's all kinds of things we can do. But my point is, let's really make some concrete steps.
Well, it strikes me there are a couple things there in what you just said. You asked some hard questions that there are no easy answers for, and there's value in that. But you also come at it with an outsider's perspective. You don't have any sacred cows or anything like that. I mean, you're coming in with fresh eyes and assessing what you see and asking what if questions and other questions around that.
Well, yes, that's the nature of the consultant-client relationship in mm-hmm. a lot of ways. When I'm engaged by a business owner, they're not engaging me to tell them what they already know or to be a yes man. That's not what they want. Mm-hmm. I'm not there to be abrasive either. I'm there to be objective mm-hmm. and to offer some ideas and expertise that they don't themselves have. Mm. So it is a different relationship.
You know, we're several minutes in this interview, and I know there's some folks that are wondering when's John going to ask about pandemic and COVID-19 and what's going on right now. And so we've got to get to that. What are you seeing right now in the clients you work with and in the world at large? What are you advising clients to do generally? I know not every client is the same. Every business is a snowflake in some way. It's unique to its own self. But what are some of the general pieces of advice you give business owners right now as they struggle with this environment?
Well, the immediate need, there's two immediate problems. One is most of my clients have received PPP funding. So they've cleared the hurdle of applying for it and they've received it. But now there's another problem that they're sitting with, which is how do I properly inject this funding into my organization so that I will get the maximum amount of forgiveness I'm allowed to by law, and I can keep my doors open. So we look at, you know, depending on the type of company, the answer to that may vary. And you're trying to do that at a time frame when a lot of the rules about how a PPP loan is to be forgiven are still being written. Yes, the general concepts have been established, but you know, the devil's in the details, John. And we're now at that point where there's very specific questions about types of expenses that can be forgiven. And all these types of minutia, what people would consider minutia, have now got to be considered. And the bad news is that a lot of it's being written right now. It's being developed in real time by the SBA and the lenders and that sort of thing. So I'm constantly keeping track of current events, if you will, mm-hmm. and knowing that anything I say could be obsolete in an hour. As far as that goes,
right.
That's a little frustrating. And if it's frustrating for me, you can imagine what it's doing to the business owner.
Sure.
So that's one immediate need. The second part is going back to one of the first subjects we talked about, which is cash flow and cash flow forecasting. I can tell you that most businesses don't really have a meaningful cash flow forecast. They're recognizing today the problem of not having that. Mm. They're feeling that pain. So many of them, who in the past might have said, I don't even look at my statement of cash flows. That's that third report I pull off my general accounting system. Or I don't have any meaningful forecast of it other than what I feel or I think. Many of them are saying, look, I need to get serious, but I need some help in structuring that. I don't even know where I go from there to make a meaningful cash flow forecast. So that if I'm ever in this position again, I can kind of answer the questions, basic questions like, how long can my business continue before I go broke? Very important question that many business owners had a hard time answering.
Right.
So these are this type of discipline and procedure needs to be implemented in every business. And I'm helping a lot of business owners now do that.
And again, you've got companies you're helping that they some of them have really good internal people that might be doing the books. They're a controller or whatever, handling the day to day. But they're not generating the kind of information that lends itself to what you're talking about.
Correct. These are great. They're great people.
Mm-hmm.
And they know that business inside and out, many of them.
Right.
But all they know is what they know. Mm-hmm. All they know is what they've been exposed to, you know, within that organization for as long as they've been there. You know, truthfully, many of them to obtain any level of seniority within the organization would have to, by definition, been in that organization for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning the downside to that, of course, is they've never seen anything else.
Right.
They don't know what other options are out there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of what I'm trying to bring into this, bring into the conversation.
Steve, I'm interested in knowing what kind of cash flow forecast timeline you look at, because obviously if for any cash flow forecast that was done in January for the following 12 months for 2020, is completely obsolete at this point. It's fiction, right? For every business. So, I mean, what makes sense for business owners to be looking at in terms of what, you know, that time frame? How far out do you think it makes sense to forecast cash?
Well, I typically will produce a 3 to 5 year cash flow. Now, obviously, the farther out you go, the less reliable it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's predicting the weather, right? It's the farther out you go, it's less predictable.
Right.
So I'll produce it on a month by month basis for a year to 2 years out,
mm-hmm.
Depending on the company. And then after that, I'll start looking at quarterly or annual cash flows. What's important in this environment is by now most businesses have a feel for what their customers are doing in this environment. Because ultimately, if you don't have the customers, you don't have the revenue.
Right.
So most businesses that I talk to, and I'm not working in, and to be clear, I don't work with any restaurateurs. That may be a whole hospitality and restaurant could be totally different than what I'm telling you now.
Sure.
So there's my disclaimer.
Mm-hmm.
But for most businesses, I think they either have seen the bottom or they know where that bottom is.
Mm.
They have a feel for it. They don't know for sure, but they kind of got a feel for it. And here locally, as we begin to open up the economy on a limited basis, that's making them feel better. As I mentioned, many of my clients already have their funding, their government PPP funding. So that hurdle has been covered. So they're starting to feel a little bit better. They're still unsure, uncertain. But they feel better than they probably did a month ago.
Yeah, for sure. Things have, a little bit of the oppressiveness has lightened up just a little bit for sure. Let's talk a little bit about how you work with clients and how an engagement works. I mean, you talked about a lot of your engagements are longer term, but let's get into how a relationship starts. Someone gets in touch with you, wants to know more. How does that conversation go?
Well, I spend a lot of time listening to their story, listening to what they want to achieve. In that first conversation, if it's something where I believe I have a chance of helping them, if I think I can do it, I'll ask them. To see if they're willing to sign an NDA with me,
mm-hmm.
And under the protection of that non-disclosure agreement, I'll ask more detailed questions. I'll take a look at their financials, that sort of thing. I may even put together some sort of a high level business comparison to see where they're operating in relation to their peer group.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, do that you know, all of that typically is complimentary. And then at that point, you know, and this is multiple conversations, that have gone on at that point, I'll make a decision if I can help that group and I'll put a proposal together for them. In that service proposal, will outline very specific goals, timeframes to achieve those goals. And we'll go forward. The reason, John, our engagements last so long is not because it takes us so long to achieve that goal. It's just that we achieve those initial goals. And then, you know, once you do that and you've developed a successful working relationship with a business owner, they're not going to let you go walking out the door.
Exactly.
There's something always new to do. So,
well, and I mean, business is the infinite game, right? I mean, to quote the Simon Sinek book, it should be. Some people don't treat it that way, which is part of the reason for that book. But it's an infinite game, and there's always change to deal with, and something that you can sink your teeth into on behalf of the business owner.
You know, something came to mind as we were just talking about that. Sometimes the goal, the end goals for some of these business owners is not financial. Mm. Sometimes it's something as simple as, I'd like to go with my spouse to Europe for 2 weeks and feel comfortable that the business isn't going to fall apart. Mm. So can Steve help me put in the systems and procedures within my organization that will allow me to have some peace of mind and do that kind of a 2 week trip? Obviously that's not going to happen anytime soon now, but when we get back to traveling.
Right. Right.
So by putting in accountability and procedure into an organization structure, that gives the business owner a lot more control over their business and a lot more peace of mind.
We're speaking with Steve Fisher, folks, and he makes spouses of business owners happy because because they get to take trips. It's amazing how that works. That the business can really suck you in if you don't have the processes that you help business owners with. So,
you know, I one of the things we'll call it a little tagline I throw out there all the time. So I like to help business owners fall in love with their business again.
Oh, I like that.
You know, they started that business because there was something they had a passion for.
Mm-hmm.
But then as time goes by, they feel themselves being drained and they don't love it so much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You can imagine this is particularly true in the case of certain professions like healthcare professionals who go into that profession thinking that they're going to, all they want to do is serve patients and make people feel better,
right?
Dentists or medical or what have you. But they morph into trying to run a business now. And oftentimes that takes them away from doing what they really love, which is patient care.
So. Absolutely. So as we kind of get down to the end here, Steve, I want to make sure we give you the opportunity to talk about maybe a success story or two that you've been involved in. I mean, folks that a situation where you're particularly proud of that you were instrumental in some really good change.
Well, the biggest success I had in my career was working with a company from taking it from startup to about $90 million a year in revenue. Then finally helping to successfully execute the sale of that company to a third party, allowing the ownership of that company to walk away with, as I say, walk away with the big golf checks and maybe never have to work again if they don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
That provides me a sense of deep personal satisfaction, knowing that I was instrumental in making that happen.
Mm.
And I love doing that. And I love growing businesses and helping business owners succeed in successfully exiting their business. I mean, John, everybody's going to leave their business at some point. It's just a question of how much control they have over that.
Mm-hmm.
And a good part of my practice is in succession planning and prepping a business for sale or for transaction. And depending on the terms of what that might look like, there's different things we have to focus on. But at the end of the day, most business owners got into business for themselves because they wanted to build something that would have meaningful impact financially on not only themselves, but their family. And many of them are looking to build generational wealth with that.
Right.
Well, that takes a lot of planning and a lot of careful steps to be executed.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is what I love to do. And watching companies successfully exit is a big part of what I like to do. I'm working with a client right now. He's got great, great big plans to grow his company.
Mm-hmm.
He's asked me to come in and we talked a little earlier about structured growth plan. He's asked me to go in there and help him develop a structured growth plan. And we're making great strides, even in the midst of all of this. But we know it's not a 6-month project. It's a true plan like that is multiple years probably to successfully execute. And he's willing to do it.
Sure.
Because he knows payoff is, as I mentioned, potentially generational wealth.
Well, and I'm glad you brought that up because that really gets into what business owners, I think, sometimes focus on the problem at hand. And the problem at hand is, you know, a big giant elephant in this case. I mean, you know, it's a huge issue dealing with the pandemic environment. But getting yourself in a position to, once this environment gets into whatever it's going to get into, where business comes back and starts again, I'm not going to use that term new normal, but I guess I just said it, but whatever we get into, putting yourself in a position to grow is what you're talking about, really, for that, in that specific engagement, right?
Yes, and actually take it one step further. Not only grow the business by whatever metric you're looking at in the business,
right?
But as a business grows, it requires a personal growth in the leadership of the company. So you end up with a situation where, if you picture a very common career path, if you will, for a small business owner, is, you know, they were fantastic, or they had this great idea. Let's just say making X or delivering XYZ service. That was their thing. They were fantastic at it. So they decided to do it on their own, and they build a business around that. And they worked hard, and they sacrificed, and they invested a lot of their own personal capital into that business. And now it's successful. But here's the problem. Their growth has stagnated because it's still reliant. The growth of the company is still 100% reliant on their personal efforts, their number of hours they personally put into that business. They have to learn the difference now between being a doer, which is how they got where they are. And they have to switch gears now to become a leader, which means now you have to bring other people into the organization and lead them. And you leverage their effort for a greater gain. And that's very difficult for an entrepreneur to switch that mindset from being doer, where if there was a problem, I rolled up my sleeve, I fixed it myself.
Right.
I'm a smart guy or a smart lady. I can do it. And it's true, but it's limiting. And they reach a point where they start to recognize it's limiting, and they can only grow so big. So now they have to become leaders. And so they ask me, see, what do we need to interject into the organization, either personnel or capital or machinery or whatever we need to do, so that I can now begin to leverage people, leverage assets, and
right,
grow greater than I ever could by myself.
Good stuff from Steve Fisher, and he's with B2B CFO. Steve, this has been great. Would love to keep the conversation going, but I need to let you get back to working with some of your clients. But for those that have heard something that creates a spark, they'd like to be in touch with you, maybe learn more about your services. Tell them how they can be in touch.
Well, you can reach out to me via email at StephenFisher@B2BCFO.com. You can go to my website at StephenFisherCFO.com. Or you can reach out and more than welcome to give me a call, 404-931-4430.
Steve Fisher, B2B CFO. Thanks for being with us.
John, thank you very much. Wish everybody the best of luck with their business.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
All right.
Folks, if you've got some frustrations that involve administrative tasks or bookkeeping, marketing, maybe you need a presentation prepared, maybe you need some coaching on how to use Zoom or something like that. I don't know. But I know some answers can come from Essie Escobedo over at Office Angels. She's the chief executive angel over there, and she's got a whole team of angels that are smart, reliable, have talent, they're experienced. They fly in, do the job, and fly off when the job is done. And they've always been virtual from the very beginning of the firm 17 or 18 years ago. So none of this environment scares them or is something they don't know how to deal with. So if you've got one of those issues, one of those problems, give SE a call, 770-442-9246, or go to officeangels.us for more information. And folks, we would love it if you would subscribe to us, to this show. North Fulton Business Radio is the search term on your favorite podcast app. and we are in all of them. So that's Apple, Google, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, iHeartRadio. We're in all the major podcast apps. So please check us out. You can go to NorthFultonBusinessRadio.com and research our archive there. We've got now we're running up on 230 or more shows. Over 500 guests now we've had over these last 4 years, and it's we've got great business leaders like Steve in that archive. So check that out and check us out on social media, North Fulton BRX on all the major platforms. That's LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter, and Instagram, by the way. But so there you go. We're everywhere. So join us there as well. For my guest, Steve Fisher, I'm John Ray. Join us next time here on North Fulton Business Radio.